by Satanic International Network. You're listening to The Ooze.
Upon decaying every foul wicked spirit in the host, The Ooze.
20 minutes, Zedor Leve on The Ooze. Red out.
On The Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
To really happen to have a serial crime
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
I love the fact that we get those 3 seconds back in the beginning now. We don't have to listen to that lady tell us, Blog Talk Radio. She's absolutely incredible. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm TC Downey, a.k.a. Beast Sino. With me on the line is the Dark Fool, Matt. How you doing today, my man?
I'm doing well, man, and I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, we have to hear that, you know, at least in the first 10 minutes of the show when we're getting prepared, her cutting in the conversation like, you've got 7 minutes. You've got 6 minutes. It's like, at least she shuts the fuck up when it's time for the show to start. So
right. Let's
do this shit.
All right, before we get into the actual show here, let's go ahead and everybody go ahead and just click the follow button. Whether it's live right now or you're listening to this in archive later, you need to click the follow button on the Ooze page. I want to see those followers getting up in the thousands, and there's thousands of you listening. So show us a little love and click the Facebook like button, too. And you can also go to our Facebook page, post comments. You could request pictures. I'm going to actually be fishing through Matt, Zach, and Jason's photo albums for what I think are the best pictures of them to put them up on the Ooze. So you get a little bit of a tour of who the hosts are and get familiar with their personality. One thing I always
just don't turn me into an alien again, my friend.
No aliens, man. This is gonna be the real deal, dude.
All right.
I'll be honest, man. If it wasn't for your Facebook page, I would still think that you're a bald guy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're
That hat covers a lot, huh?
Yeah. I thought, you know, you must have like one of them horseshoes going, but no, you actually have a full head of hair. So I'm impressed by that.
Oh, yeah, dude. Oh, yeah, I got good genes on my mom's side. Thank you very much.
Right on. Real quick, also, before we get into this, the Ooze is still offering assistance in negotiating your contract with Satan. If you want to, you know, negotiate your contract with Satan, then all you got to do is just send an email to sellyoursoul@fearthebeast.com, and we'll get you hooked up with Jason Sorrell. He's a man. He knows how to make the juices squeeze worth it, if you know what I'm saying.
Dude, I can't believe we actually had the Prince of Darkness call in, man, the rock legend himself.
Yeah, that was excellent.
That was amazing.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Also, there's a slideshow. You can look through a couple different pictures. I put some pictures that I think are relative to the show today up there, one of them being the actual overview of what we're talking about, at least as it is stated on the Wikipedia page. I myself am a huge fan of Sigmund Freud's work. I don't think that he got a lot of things right, but when he got something right, he hammered the shit out of it.
Yep, and dude, I couldn't agree more. In the book that I am writing, I am particularly focusing in on Beyond the Pleasure Principle by Sigmund Freud. Again, I'm with you 100% in the sense that I don't agree particularly with the fact that Sigmund Freud was all about this oral stage, anal stage. I mean, a lot of sexual repression was going on by the time, and I think that affected his view. But a lot of things, when Freud nailed it, in particular the topic of the show, Freudian projection, he was on the money.
Right on. You know, what's really funny, as I've heard a lot of people refer to this actual behavior in a different manner. They tend to tell people that person is constructing a straw man. And it's kind of actually an inaccurate description of what's going on. What's really going on is psychological projection. And for those of you folks who don't know what psychological projection is, I'm going to read two paragraphs right off of a Wikipedia page.
I'm on the same page myself.
I don't see any reason for me to try to sum it up any better than this. So, psychological projection or projection bias is a psychological defense mechanism where a person unconsciously denies his or her own attributes, thoughts, and emotions which are ascribed to the outside world, such as to other people. Thus, projection involves imagining or projecting the belief that others have those feelings. So that's real quick. That's the first little paragraph to sum that up. You are placing something that you yourself hold as a characteristic, denying that it's there, but placing it on an external being, on an external person. You are projecting upon. Go ahead.
Now, if I could interject here and say that you actually, we've talked about this on other shows before, but I think the fourth way can actually shed a little bit of light on this, particularly with their concept of imagining.
Yeah, it's directly related to imagining, in my opinion, but there's still a variation of differential between what Gurdjieff's talking about and imagining and what's actually going on in terms of projection. Now, I don't know if that one paragraph is sufficient enough to explain what's happening with this projection, but the given example a little bit later on the Wikipedia page, and the example is blaming other people for self-failure. For instance, you know, you don't get a job, you don't get a promotion at work because you're constantly late, you're taking unwarranted breaks, your production level's low, and rather than accept the fact that you didn't get that promotion because you didn't merit that promotion, you say, well, it's because so-and-so is talking shit about me, or it's because this over there, and that makes it so I can't do this. You know, whatever it is, you construct a reason for your failure that doesn't lie within yourself. As a Satanist, I detest this kind of behavior.
Now, also, this is where people confuse it with straw man, is it not?
Yeah. It's precisely where people confuse it with straw man. The straw man is constructing an argument that's not necessarily one that you hold for a person that is not the position they hold either. So the straw man lacks the fact that you're not putting your own conditions on the argument that you're constructing for that person, but you're actually kind of doing the opposite. You're building an argument up that your position can take down, if you understand what I'm saying.
Right, right.
So that's the variation there. The interesting things here that were kind of going on with is that I have seen this happen a lot on the Sin Forum lately, projection. And it always somehow lingers right around this little statement: respect is earned and not given. Now, it doesn't matter where the statement falls in conjunction with it. Somewhere around that statement, you will find some projection happening. That's one example.
Well, can you elaborate a bit more on that? Have you seen situations in which that applies? I mean, to kind of paint a clearer picture?
Yeah, I certainly can. Basically, in a nutshell, a person will come into a forum thread being disrespectful, and then when they are attacked aggressively and given disrespect back, say, well, you're being disrespectful of me. But they ignore at this point the fact that they started off being disrespectful in the first place. And so then they usually, right after that, will prompt the phrase, respect is earned. Respect is earned, not given. It happens every fucking time. So.
Yeah, man. Hey, just to give you an example, on the same forum, you know, I'm not going to mention any names, but on the same forum, I came across that not too long ago. and this is also classic Freudian projection, where this person was unformed. You know, I was not bothering him. He was not bothering me. I was just kind of being myself. Person comes out and he says, "You got a big ego, don't you?" And I say, "Well, this is kind of the left-hand path. All of us kind of have big egos in this room. A little bit, yeah." And so he comes on and he says, you know, and here's the key right here. Not necessarily what he says in the first part of the next sentence, but in the second part. He says, "I bet you're some 35-year-old guy who lives with his mom," and this is the part to focus in on, who gets off on crushing people over the internet. It's like, wait a minute. You're attacking me, and you're telling me that I get off on crushing people on the internet? And anybody who knows me, on that forum knows me pretty well. I mean, I can handle my own when it comes to confrontation. I personally don't like it. I don't like picking fights, but should a fight come my way, hey, I'm willing to throw down. You know, I roll with the punches, but I don't go picking fights. That's definitely not my style.
Right. Now, what's actually interesting, I was a witness to this event that you're talking about.
Right.
What's interesting is after you left the room, after you left and you know,
I had to leave because I don't want anybody thinking that I pushed out and just left. I had to leave because my dad's Blu-ray, it's true, I live with my parents, but I'm also going back to college and going for a second job. So I'm making the best out of a shitty situation. And I'm not 35, I'm 30, so he was wrong on that one. So here's the deal. I had to leave the room because my dad's Blu-ray player was streaming, and that was tying up the bandwidth, and I had already been on the net long enough, so I said, okay, you know, I better be equal, and I better give him, you know, the time and the download speed. So I said, okay, so I got off.
Okay, well, either way, yeah, whatever the reasons are, it was obvious that you didn't leave out of some form of butt hurtness. I mean, being somebody who was there afterwards. After you actually left, he proceeded to pick an argument with me. So, you know, it was interesting in the fact that he was hostily engaging, and then he was using circular logic to try to justify his attacks and everything, and that's neither here nor there. We're kind of straying away from the whole point of this.
Right,
you know,
right. His
whole
fault, though, his downfall, if he picks a... I pity whoever picks an argument with you, pal.
Right. Well, he didn't make it very long. I mean, he definitely ran me around in the same circle for a little while, but eventually I was able to figure out a couple of sentences that would just shut him up entirely. So, I want to do now, I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines, 347-989-1371. What I'd like to see happen is I'd like to see people call in and, you can call in and tell us about a situation in which you've experienced, you know, some form of projection, or you've done it yourself, because I know myself at times I have projected on people.
And I have too. I'm guilty of it as well.
Right.
So,
you know, give some examples of projection that we haven't actually covered so far in the show. Or you can call in and talk about other similar lines of thinking that are just slightly variant, like imagining and identifying, which is in the fourth way. And, you know, we can maybe discuss that as well. But certainly it's a discussion edition. I want to get some people on here discussing. I talk to Matt all the time. Don't have to do it while it's being recorded.
Right.
Now, if
it's okay, I would like to start this off by bringing up another situation. In particular with me, now you and I know, and everybody else who, you know, follows us on Facebook, follows us on YouTube, knows that Zach and I, a little while back, had an argument.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, you know, I got pissed. I got pissed for a good reason, but I kind of went overboard with it and bitched out. That was me. I plead guilty to that because, I mean, and here's the deal, though. Like, everything got smoothed out and everything got resolved. Now, that was on YouTube. You know, transfer over to Facebook. There's one particular person who's on both who we know pretty well. Not going to mention names, But this person said to me, you know what, you're a whiner. You whine too much. Oh, my God, you whine. You bitch so much. And I said to him, I was like, oh, yeah? Well, you're fat. So, you know, there's projection going on with me. It's like I'm not Mr. Universe myself. I've got myself quite a beer and coffee gut, and I need to hit the gym big time.
Right.
But on his case, it was funny because after a while, I just shut up. I said, all right, I'm not going to, you know, he doesn't like complaining. And besides, what's that rule in Satanism? One of the rules of the earth, like, don't give your opinions or advice unless you're absolutely sure the other party wants to hear it. Paraphrasing,
yeah.
But.
Right.
You know, so I took that, you know, I took that to heart. I said, okay, this person's getting annoyed that I'm quote unquote whining too much. I'm just going to shut up. And I did shut up. And this person kept coming back to me saying, oh, look, you whine. He posts YouTube videos with my name labeled on it and says, this is the dark fool. And it was like, what was it, the Hebrew hammer, where it's like the whining meter, which I thought is funny. I can actually laugh at myself. I'm a fucking jester, for crying out loud. If you can't laugh at yourself and you're a jester, there's a fucking problem. But,
right.
Really, really quickly, I'm gonna finish up the story. So I stopped whining. He's posting signs that says, no whining allowed on Facebook. And I say to him, you know, I stopped whining. Why are you carrying on? He's like, or I said to him, I said, if I stopped whining, what does this make you? And he says, I'm a finger pointer. Now stop your whining. And I said, apparently the concept of a rhetorical question escapes you, pal. And shortly thereafter, he deleted me off of Facebook. And I think that was a classical example of Freudian projection right there with him. I did it too when I called him a fatty because I myself am fat.
Right on.
So, yeah.
All right, we've got a caller. I'm going to go ahead and bring them on the line. Caller, you're on the ooze. 757?
Oh, that's me. I wasn't sure because you said you had someone else too. It's Sin.
Hey, what's going on, Allison?
Hey, Sin.
Hey, you guys are cracking me up. We all know who's being talked about, but that shit's just funny as hell. I wanted to bring to the table third-party projection.
Okay.
Because I recently experienced this, and it's kind of funny because, you know, people don't realize when they are, even when somebody points it out that says, oh, you're projecting, you know, cut it out, stop projecting. They don't want to admit that they are projecting. I was on a radio show recently where they brought on a very controversial subject matter. So you got a National Socialist Party who's anti-Jew, and then they put the Jew on the radio. So naturally, the Jew is going to get butthurt. And my point was to say, doesn't matter what this person says to you, they cannot shatter your image. Only you can shatter your image. But this one ignored. So this person chose to identify with being called a parasite and then emotionally reacted. That emotional and irrationality then got projected onto me simply because I was just pointing out that this is a projection and why are you letting this person get to you? Let's get to the bottom line message. It's very clear that they're anti-Jew. You're a Jew. But if you want to know what these people are trying to accomplish, it's going to get lost in your projections and all this emotional hoo-ha, and it's a disservice to the listenership because we just want to know what these people are trying to get accomplished. We already know they hate Jews. That's already been established. That's all over their website. It's in their material. There's no question about that. You're not going to make them love Jews all of a sudden.
Right.
I just want to know what the hell they were trying to accomplish, and what they were trying to accomplish affects us all. And so because I wasn't getting angry about the anti-Jew rhetoric, her projections onto me were that I must be anti-Jew too. I'm like,
well, I think part of it was that you weren't giving her the reaction that she had anticipated.
Uh-huh. Because I wasn't identifying with whatever she was saying to me. I mean, she was
right.
Posting blogs and emails. And
you know, in particular, that compares to my story, in the sense that this person was trying to provoke me and I wasn't identifying with the fact that I am a whiner. I whined on occasion. I did that, you know, I don't make a habit of it, but it did happen, but I don't make it a habit. I don't identify with being a whiner and a complainer.
Right.
Yeah. now to address the chat comment, you know, is it a projection? Is the projection their fault or is it my fault? All right, my situation, I don't really look at it as fault. I just see it as happenstance. Like they don't realize they're projecting. Even when you point it out, hey, you're projecting. I'm not projecting because I'm not angry and upset. I'm still just trying to get to the information. Like, hey, we're still trying to get the message, but we can't get it because now there's all this emotional turmoil going on. It's distracting. Can we get past this, you know, so we can get to the bottom line here? Because I was interested in getting the bottom line, but I couldn't get it because all this projection was going on.
Right. And what's interesting about projection is up until the point at which someone distinguishes that it's happening, it really is a two-party deal. You know, by allowing somebody to ascribe attributes to yourself that aren't your own, you're in essence kind of enabling them to do the projection, so to speak. So you know, it's not until that point when you realize, wait, these values don't apply to me, and you're projecting them onto me, that you remove yourself from responsibility of the actual I don't know what interaction that's happening.
Yeah, and the other comment is that it's being reactionary. The reaction is to say you're projecting. The reaction is to try to kind of formulate some kind of diplomacy so that you can get past that and move on. So in your situation, Matt, while this is all going on, you know, what's the bottom line for you? Is it because you reacted to it, now you've learned something?
I'd say that I was more pro-action, or you know, I took a step back more than the other party did, and this other party ended up deleting me off of Facebook, off of their friends list, which I was like, okay, that's fine, because you know, what need have I for that in my life?
Yeah, in my case, I just blocked the messages. Like instead of letting this person fill my mailbox and even respond to the message, while it's a reaction to block them, There's no outlet for it. So then it's also proactive. It's reactionary and proactionary.
Yeah, I mean, I actually did a lot of filtering. When I first came onto YouTube, I did a lot of filtering of, like, comments and stuff, partially because there was a lot of advertisers and spammers that were hitting my page. And I just kind of went with it and started blocking trolls as well. But you know what? I think that it makes you a stronger person when you deal with it head on. I mean, that's the approach I take. It's like, if trolls come on and say, oh, you're a retard, and, you know, you just come on and you're just looking for a fight to feel like a big shot on YouTube, and, you know, you're really a loser in your life. I mean, it is kind of important to take in that kind of conflict because I think it builds you up and makes you stronger. So, I mean, that's the approach I take. I used to take the other one, but I was like, you know what? It's kind of perceived as being a pussy, and I just tried the other approach, and it worked out.
Yeah, and even the action of taking non-action is a reaction.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Great.
You know, it's really fascinating because, I mean, I'm sitting here, and we're all pretty much being negative about projection. You know, we see it as being a logical fallacy of sorts or a irrational form of behavior, but it has a great deal of value in helping ease anxiety. From what I understand, it gives a person an ability to express something that they themselves can't deal with and attack it externally rather than trying to, you know, wrestle with it internally and, you know, basically shutting down by, you know, blocking the fact that they feel this way and then projecting it upon another person. You know, they're giving themselves an easier route to deal with it. They don't have to have a sense of responsibility attached to it. So even though I frown on the behavior and I think it's retarded, I know that in the psychological field, this actually kind of can be used as a valuable tool.
So on that note, can you find any positive value of projection in terms of positive projection? Is projection always projecting negative attributes. Is there any cases you can see where you can project positive?
Yeah.
Because I personally see it just scapegoating it onto a victim. You know, I mean, that's all I see is the negative. So I would have to second that and say enlighten me.
Okay, I can do that. Here's a for instance, boy meets girl. Girl and boy are together for a while. Girl believes that she is in love with boy, or girl, yeah, believes that she is in love with boy, but she has to tell herself that he's in love with her. It happens all the time. I see couples that break up, and the one person's shell-shocked because they thought that this person was madly in love with them, but they were projecting their own feelings upon them. It wasn't that this person ever indicated that they were madly in love with them. So, and that's actually a positive thing while the projection is happening. The end result, the end consequence is negative, but the actual experience of projecting that feeling of being loved on them, or loving on them, helps you to feel like you are being loved, which ultimately, I mean, you can't love something, well, I guess you could, but it's rather difficult to love something to death.
So the applied delusion is helpful for a time, but the end result is a negative.
Right, right. And I think the reverse happens too, where the applied delusion is a negative, but the end result can be positive. So I think it's one of those situations where, you know, from the psychological standpoint, my understanding of it is that as long as it's recognized, it can become a valuable tool. It's in one way or shape exactly what theists do. You know, it's exactly what theists do. They project God.
Yes. Yeah, God means... You know, thought forms, a lot of the stuff I'm bringing up. It's like there, I think, it's very interesting, actually. There could be, I wonder if there's some sort of a connection where it's like they externalize something, but then that thing in and of itself could be a living thing elsewhere. You know, like something you project psychologically then takes on, it becomes a meme and takes on a life of its own. Especially if you get enough people that believe in that.
And that can be very paradoxical in nature because, okay, so when a theist projects outside of themselves that God is an external thing, or God, they then attach attributes to what they seem to believe is an external thing, but it's actually an internal thing that they've projected out.
Right.
So it's really them that they believe that they are loving, and they are attaching attributes to it that stem from them. So it becomes very, you know, paradoxical and, you know, circular.
It's extremely circular, absolutely. But in the reverse, I think atheism can be a projected thing, too. You know?
True. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, so...
That's why you have, like, I think the fundamental atheists are just as bad as the you know, fundamental theists or fundamental Christians or whatever. Pick a sect.
Absolutely. I would agree.
Yeah. And this is why I've always held the thing that I like ideas and principles better than beliefs and faith. That's just when you add something, that level of emotional sincerity and intensity to it and grip onto it in the way that you end up projecting it, that ultimately leaves you wanting in one way or the other. If it's something more fluid or malleable, like an idea or a principle.
But here's an interesting question. Without that total emotional attachment, is there quote unquote prayer or quote unquote magic as effective?
In the sense of magic?
Yeah, the emotion that's tied in with believing in something so rigidly and so solidly. I mean, how would that? I mean, that may be a topic for another show, and we're very much getting off topic here. I realize that. We'll head back in a second. But how would that emotion and that essence, that attachment, that projection actually be more effective? I mean, could it possibly affect magic in that sense and causing change to occur in conformity with will?
Well, let me ask you a question. You've obviously in your life projected upon people. Did you achieve whatever your goal was at that point when you began projecting?
I would say in some circumstances, no. In others, possibly yes. I mean, I can't remember offhand any particular one, but I can tell you that I've come far because projection for me was a fallacy, and I didn't see it at the time. And so the failure of that made me grow. At the same time, if I hadn't taken those steps, I don't know where I would be. You know, I did get far from life, but I had to take a misstep in order to
right.
do that.
Right, but what I'm asking is, was your projection directly bearing of the results that you desired?
No.
No. Okay. And Allison, how's your experience been? I'm sure you've projected on people too. We all do it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We're all guilty of it. I mean, we're human.
Yeah.
Let me see. Let me think of any instance where I projected and produced a result. Actually, yeah, because you can project onto a person. Even though they're your feelings and your thoughts and you're projecting it onto them, there's that human interaction element which will then force their will to do something you want. So if I force their will by way of projection and it got me what I want, then yeah.
Okay, so it seems like a pretty solid answer.
Was it what you wanted? Did it work out in the short term? I mean, did it fade over time or did it work out in the long term?
I would say long term.
Wow. Okay then.
Yeah.
I
wouldn't happen like that in every case, but I can at least call up at least one instance in my brain where that did produce the results, you know, in line with this question.
Yeah, I've experienced myself points where my own projection has yielded the results that I wanted it to. I project upon my employees my work ethic every season. All the new employees that I get my work ethic projected upon them. I don't care what they're actually capable of or can do when I hire them. I know that when I put them to work, they're going to work as hard as I do or they're going to fall to the wayside pretty quickly. So
that is an excellent example
in a working
environment.
That's why I was asking about positive results of projection. You know, can it be positive? It doesn't always have to be negative.
Right. So I think we answered that question and kind of answered the other question that Matt was posing, which is that is projection a thing? Well, I don't remember exactly how you worded it, but
yeah. Is it effective? Like within essence, you know, like can it be a positive thing such as? I didn't word it like this before, but kind of like fuel. Could it be good in the sense that it can cause positive results in the fact that it is strong enough? I mean, you project something strong enough, you can get, apparently you can get results if it's within the office setting, like we said. But many people often misuse it and put it on the wrong person and are really attacking themselves.
Right, right. It's how you project. That's what we're coming to. It's how you project.
All right. Now, as a fourth way guy, let's talk about imagining. What can you tell us about imagining and how it relates to, projection?
It relates in the same ways that projection actually happens. You ascribe, attributes to something outside of yourself. But, I mean, imagining and identifying are more so... they're done one way or the other. You can do it either in an inner sense where you are ascribing your attributes to the person above you, or you can do it in an external sense where that you think that you have the same attributes as the person outside of you. Consideration works in a couple of different ways, and it's kind of complicated for me to explain.
Can I help a little bit in this regard? Because I'm trying to get a bottom line answer from you too, because you study fourth way as well. I'm trying to find ways to demonstrate that identifying can be positive. It's not always negative. And this is directly from the Gurdjieff Opensky School of Fourth Way. It says,
right.
In the work, we are told to observe identification as one of its most powerful forces, keeping us asleep and prevents us from awakening. because we do everything mechanically are not properly conscious, we identify all the time. We identify with our thoughts, feelings, and what happens in our outer life. So it's basically teaching that identifying is always a negative attribute that keeps us asleep. And I'm trying to find ways to articulate that it can be used positively, as we've just now demonstrated with projection.
Well, absolutely it can be used positively. I think the first thing that really needs to be understood about identifying and imagining is those are direct behaviors that happen from influences. And so it is either a conscious or an unconscious decision to follow a particular influence. Influences come in many different forms. You can have a physical influence. You can have an emotional influence. You can have a logical influence. You know, you guys get all of these things, artistic influences. And when you are identifying or imagining, you are choosing how you're interacting with that type of influence. For instance, I'm a smoker, and, you know, so the influence of the nicotine on my body keeps me craving it, keeps me wanting it. It's something that I unconsciously identify with all the time. I identify with the fact that I'm a smoker, or I identify with smokers, but I don't have to have it that way. I could start identifying with non-smokers and see myself as being a non-smoker. And when I see myself as being a non-smoker, and it becomes so, I'm a non-smoker. So I don't know if that helps any, but
actually, that's a really good example. I'm going to use that. I'm going to use this post show to be like, here, listen to this.
So, I mean, at least in terms of how Gurdjieff taught it. Now, Ouspensky, personally, I believe, makes identifying always sound negative, and that's why I say that Ouspensky did not get what Gurdjieff was teaching.
And I'm finding that myself as well, which is why I'm glad that you have also studied, and you've studied more Gurdjieff than I have.
Likewise, and I'm doing the same. I'm actually in the beginning stages. So, I mean, but I've also seen that as well when it comes to Ouspensky. He differs, at the very least, I would say he differs slightly, or he differs from Gurdjieff, I'll just put it that way.
Right.
And but also, yeah, I have seen that in the negative context.
Right. Now in terms of actually considering, and this is where I think it gets tricky and you might falter up, considering is done when you pay attention to a particular set of feelings or ideas or whatever. You're considering them. You're thinking them over. You're giving them their merit. You're weighing them. That also sometimes can, I guess, play into imagining, because if you imagine these things that you're thinking about to be something that they're not, then, you know, your consideration is flawed, and what ends up happening is a negative thing. You know, like thinking of yourself as being the Messiah, and no matter how many times you say it, it just doesn't make it so to anybody but yourself.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, and then that goes with on a previous show how we talked about our own realities, and whoever is identifying with being the Messiah in their reality, they're going to be the Messiah, but not in my reality, not in your reality.
Right, and to actually assume that you're, I guess you could eventually affect a mem that big that it might become prominent reality, but the likelihood of it when you have so many people that are consciously against that idea is that it's going to get, drowned out with the swell.
Now, in terms of projection, if whoever is identifying as the Messiah continues to project that onto people to the point where their will has now been changed to believe them to be the Messiah, and then they get behind that idea, couldn't that subjective reality then become other people's reality?
Sure, and that's usually how you end up with people drinking poison Kool-Aid. So, yeah, I mean, that absolutely happens all the time. You know, you think about Jim Jones and that whole deal. You know, they all believed he was the Messiah because he was projecting it on them. The same case with Charles Manson, you know.
I would say Charles Manson is a better idea, a better example than Jim Jones, because Jim Jones was using psychological terrorism. A lot of those people didn't willingly drink that Kool-Aid. They were forced to drink that Kool-Aid. There's a difference.
Right.
Yeah, and people actually wanted to follow Manson, wanted to do his will.
Exactly. And still to this day, I mean, the Manson family kids are still out there.
Right.
waiting for the Messiah to be released from prison.
Right. Well, here's the thing, and I want you to understand that even though there is that difference, it's not nearly as vast of a difference as what you think it is. The premises are the same. The end result is the same. It's just the tactics used in between that's different.
True. I'll agree. Because, you know, now if the people refused to drink the Kool-Aid and they were shot, their will was still intact before they were shot.
Right.
The will was not changed.
Right. Their will was not changed, but that might ultimately have given leverage to change the will of others, which, I mean, actually, since more people died of the poison from the Kool-Aid than shotgun shots in that particular instance, it suggests to me that was an effective tool for continuing the projection.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, good point.
So, just my thoughts on the whole deal. This has been a great show. 18 minutes left to go. Anybody
else? There is one other thing, another attribute that I would like to bring up, if I may, Beast.
Okay, go ahead.
This is also a subject that I'm exploring within my book, and that is the concept of catharsis and how, I mean, obviously, when you see a play or when you see a movie, you know, you suspend belief, you know, the suspension of disbelief is what it's accurately called. And you're watching this and you identify with, you know, characters, and the act itself, the play, the movie, whatever it is, acts as a form of catharsis for the audience. And I think when it comes to creation, when it comes to whether you create art, whether you write a play, whether it's music, etc., the artistic impulse can help tremendously when it comes to projection and identifying. It'll help push out those emotions in order to get a better understanding of oneself.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's actually a topic I'm exploring right as we speak. You know, like, is knowledge or is art knowledge?
Right.
And can you project that knowledge onto others, which will then, you know, in turn influence them, and then, you know, if each piece of art becomes a ritual object, then changes their will, and then it becomes a cultural corrector.
And this, we talked about Freud. While we're on the topic of Freud and projection, this is also what he talked about in Beyond the Pleasure Principle, which I'll be quoting in my own book. There was an instance where he was watching over a little boy and studying the mannerisms and behaviors, and this boy had... in order to act out, he didn't act out directly on the parents, but what he did was he took his toys and he would act out with that. And the dramatization would be, you know, throwing the toy and then picking it back up. And that was like the, you know, the sending forth, sending away, and then the great return when he got it back. So in that sense, that little tiny child's game played a role as catharsis, and the projection that he did of what was going on inside of himself was on those objects, and he was able to, you know, exercise that negative ability out of himself through playing that child's game.
Good example.
Yeah, that is a good example. To go back to what Allison was talking about and art being knowledge, I would absolutely and totally agree with that. I would say that art is the first way humans ever learn to really transfer knowledge or, transfer knowledge, communicate knowledge.
Right.
So,
because the tangible art piece is taking that art knowledge from within you and finding some medium to express it outward so that it can be conveyed and viewed by others.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
the cave paintings, the early caveman cave paintings come to mind. The ones that were, I believe, the first ones discovered in France, you know, where people would kill buffalo, you know, or kill other animals, and that was portrayed on the caves.
And that's a good example, too, because there are so many different theories about what that art conveys. Some, it's in reality, it's just a cave painting. The viewer, even the most educated scholars, would then speculate and formulate theories. Like if they saw people that look seemingly in dance positions, because I study transcendental dance and art history. Some of these cave paintings are being speculated to be evidence that these, you know, prehistoric people had some kind of dance in their tribes. But did they really? What is really the evidence to support that other than viewing the art?
The beginning of theater also started out as dance, dancing around the altar of a slayed goat, which was, you know, that started out with the chorus, the dithy room and all that stuff, and that later eventually evolved into theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's really kind of interesting here, and this whole conversation points directly towards maybe our understanding of knowledge being a little one-sided and flawed. You know, because we always assume that knowledge, you can give some kind of a cause and effect type statement or understanding. But, you know, in the example of the cave paintings where, you know, that just because they look like they're in some form of a dance position, we make an assumption that, you know, that they're dancing, and it's not necessarily the case. There's not much proof outside of that.
Exactly.
Oh, right. There's many different theories, and one of them could be that, you know, these images were posted on the wall as a form of hoping and wishing that so they could hunt it and eat it and survive the winter. I mean,
right.
They didn't necessarily kill the animals, but were putting up the history of them killing the animals, preaching and praying for it.
But look at how much knowledge is transferred from just viewing these images. Look at how many theories were formed simply from viewing these images.
But here's the thing, and kind of what I was getting to with all of that is the fact that what knowledge really kind of indicates to me, or at least my understanding of knowledge, is it's more based around imagination. It's what your mind can conjure to explain whatever it is that's in front of you. So.
Right, because like for example, an experience. Like a child. A child, as many times as a parent will tell them, don't touch the stove, it's hot. Don't touch the stove, it's hot. Or shoo them away from the stove. But the curiosity is still going to drive them to go touch the stove. They burn their hand. Now they have the experiential knowledge of, that's hot. So the experience of burning their hand is the knowledge transferred. So now they know that that is hot. That is why my mom told me not to touch it.
Right.
Well, I think also that ties into the different learning, you know, different learning styles, you know, what works best for an individual. You know, some people could be visual, some people could be auditory, and some people are kinesthetic.
Right. I would agree with that. What I actually think is interesting about this hand-burning analogy that you just did, Allison, is that we only know that sensation of hot, and it being attached to a negative, not good attribute is there because someone kind of imposed that on us or kind of considered it. So, I mean, if you think about it, had someone instead put your hand onto it, up against it, or you touched it and it was hot, and someone said, oh, doesn't that feel great? And someone might actually seek out that sensation after a period of time of seeing, you know, that it had this pain effect to it. It's kind of interesting in that the cause and effect only actually happens because, you know, either somebody on the outside tells you, hey, this is a bad feeling, or tells you, hey, this is a good feeling. And then from there, you're able to actually construct a logical sequence as to what the consequence is.
True. Good one. And that would even... be relevant in fetishists, those
exactly.
Who seek out pain. Yes, those who seek out pain as a way to experience ecstasy.
Exactly.
Yeah, we got about 10 minutes left of the show. That I think, you know, both of you, particularly you, Beast, I know you draw speaking of art and fetish, you know, you've done a lot of photo manipulations and a lot of art pieces depicting bondage and fetish. So, I mean, what's your take on that tying in with projection?
I'm not quite sure what you mean. Do you mean like,
I mean, projection in that, I mean, well, here's the other thing. Freud was also big on sex. Maybe something's wrong, again, as I mentioned earlier, being part of the fact was during those times, sexuality and all that was being repressed, and I think that had a lot to do with his view, and I think it was skewed a little bit. But in the sense where projection plays a role in dominant submission, bondage, you know, sub-dom type of relationship. I mean, what would you see, what role would you see projection in that specific area?
Well, I mean, there's always the projection that a dominant does onto a submissive when he kind of outlines the expected behaviors, but I don't know if that's really in terms of what we're talking about, psychological projection applies. I mean, it's kind of a...
I could probably make it apply. I'm a kinkster myself, too. All right, consider the role of the sub. Okay, so the sub has to project onto the dom what behavior they need to have modified in order to control the dom's dominance.
Okay, yeah, that's a very relevant perspective. I guess if I had stepped into that shoe instead of my naturally inclined one, I would have easily seen that. Yeah, that's certainly something that is there. And matter of fact, you see them act out just to be punished sometimes. You know, like a while back, a couple of years ago, was participating on this website called Collar Me. And on there was a girl that would post pictures of, pictures of men she had slept with and then pictures of the punishment that she had received after going home and revealing or sort of letting the cat out of the bag with the dominant. So I guess that's interesting that is a form of projection now that it's being brought out.
Yeah, because most people don't understand that in a sadomasochist relationship, it's the masochist that controls the relationship, not the sadist.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They determine a lot of things. They determine the amount of exposure they're going to have to whatever they want to be subjected to. They determine what they want to be subjected to.
Passive-aggressive, yeah.
I have never seen a set of hard limits posted by a dominant, ever.
Exactly, because it's determined by the masochist, and
right.
Every single person is different.
That's a very interesting tie-in, and I'm glad we got that into the show also.
Yeah,
I wrote a paper on it. It's on my website if you want to check it out. I did a whole paper on the Marquis de Sade.
Dude, let's link it.
Yeah, let's do that. I'm pulling it up right now. Just got.
Oh yeah, it's a long paper. This is something you'd have to read later.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, thank you for the contribution, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's just some way to, you know, I always look at everything from different angles, so it's just some way to tie it in.
It's going to be in the library section, right, Allison?
Yes, sir.
All right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to drop a link directly to the library section in the chat room, and they can find it from there.
Yeah, it's on there. It's featured, so it should be easy to find.
Yeah. It's right there. For the folks who are listening that don't have the availability of the chat room, it's www.the/poison-apple.com. So, you know, yeah.
That way they can examine that dynamic and see the projections.
Yeah, I mean, definitely adds an interesting element to the conversation today, and I really wish I'd thought to a little more researching on it, because I'm sure now that I could probably come up with a dozen other examples.
Oh, sure. Most certainly.
Well, we got about 5 minutes left. I mean,
Right, 5 minutes left. Anybody got anything they want to talk about or anything they're getting involved with?
I'll go ahead and plug my book, my forthcoming book, Way of the Dionysian.
Right on.
What's the publisher? Is it self-published?
You know what? Actually, I am going to look for publishers, but I do not have publishers at this time.
Okay. Because I got connections there, brother.
Well, we will talk then. Awesome.
I want to throw out there real quick. I decided after some events that happened yesterday and it kind of spilled out onto the news, I decided yesterday that I'm going to take over Luciferianism for the folks that don't know how to do it right and kind of break it down in the way that I see that it should be, because right now all it is Satanism with a little more of a romantic edge to it. Yeah.
You know, I've noticed that too, and a lot of times I've seen those terms used interchangeably with very little difference. I mean, people said, oh, I'm not a Satanist, I'm a Luciferian. It's like, well, what does that mean?
I know, it's annoying. You can tell they haven't studied. Yeah, you can tell they haven't studied.
Yeah.
I think one of the pioneers of Luciferianism would be Michael W. Ford, obviously.
Right, but again, it's just Satanism with different aesthetics. That's all Michael Ford's pushing. Oh, and he mixes in a little Sedian and Egyptian to kind of subdue.
And Persian.
Yeah, and Persian.
Yeah, I can honestly say I haven't seen it done properly. So, yeah, I'd follow your work.
Yeah. Definitely. So, here it is. I'm the Venture Satanist of Luciferianism as of yesterday.
Right on.
So,
really?
Yes.
I don't see any tentacles and large breasts.
It's coming, man. I got to get the feathers off of him first.
Well, I don't know. I would consider
okay.
His tongue one long tentacle. I like the way he approaches subjects. That's why I follow the show.
Right on.
Awesome.
Right on. 3 minutes left. Anybody got anything left they want to talk about?
Nothing I can think of.
Huh?
I'm tapped out.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for the great show. I'll go ahead and roll the outro, and we'll kill it a couple of minutes early and just say, hey, it was, you know, whatever, 58 minutes of solid material. So,
absolutely.
You know what threw off our time? The woman didn't come in and say Blog Talk Radio at the beginning.
Yes?
That's what threw it all off.
That's it. That's what fucked it up. All right, folks. Join us tomorrow night on the Ooze Outbreak Edition, and thanks for tuning in.
Later on.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is the Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Satanic International Network as its official Blog Talk Radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?